This podcast is brought to you by the Marketing Development Academy. The Academy holds a number of courses specifically designed to help marketers and marketing professionals skill up and demonstrate their worth to either their clients or their employers. You can find out more at marketingdevelopment.academy.
And I decided that, okay, whenever I hit that runway, then I will quit my job.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. I am your host, Pete, and today I am talking to Damien Schruers from Macpreneur. We talk about how to find a niche and how to set up a business when you are ingrained in that Monday to Friday 9-to-5. This is a great episode. Please listen in. Welcome to the Marketing Development Podcast, and you are joining a conversation between myself and Damien Schruers from Macpreneur. Damien, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you, Pete.
Thanks for finding the time to come on the show. I really appreciate it. Damien and I are both part of Chris Ducker's Youpreneur Academy, and we connected on there. And Damien offered to come on the show and share a bit about what he does for a living and the leap that he's taken from sort of employment into entrepreneurship, I suppose you'd say, a few years ago. So, Damien, do you want to explain a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes, so initially I'm an engineer, and I've had an almost 18 years corporate career for a big American tire manufacturer in Luxembourg. And in 2013, I started my own company, but on the side. It was a side hustle. Mm-hmm. And basically, I wanted to explore the fact that... explore the idea of being my own boss. And it took me about 3 years to finally make the leap to full-time entrepreneurship. And so since 2016 now, I'm running EasyTech. The company is called EasyTech. Mm-hmm. It's a consulting and a training a firm specialized on Apple products and services.
So, and you run it through the website macpreneur.com, don't you?
So I have two things. I have my main website, easytech.lu. Mm-hmm. It's mostly for my local customers.
Yeah.
And then I've started a podcast last year called Macpreneur. That's for more for the international audience. And Macpreneur is about helping entrepreneurs who are using Apple products and services to run their businesses.
And it really is. I've listened to a couple of your shows, and I've sort of been browsing your sort of podcast history, and it's quite a unique take on something to actually kind of hook your business into a brand like Apple. You know, most of us try and obviously do something on our own, or you know, offer services that way. But you've sort of deep dove. Is that how you'd say that? Anyway, you've delved into Apple particularly. So, was there a reason for that? Why did you choose that?
Well, when I started EasyTech, it was more because I wanted to become my own boss, and because I really love technology and IT, and so I'm quite good, a good thinker, if you want. And so when I started EasyTech, it was more, okay, let's find a way to start a business in the technology field. And I started doing a lot of things, like helping people with their Wi-Fi. I still have a customer today that I coach on Excel, for instance, Microsoft Excel. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing a bunch of things, and it was the exploration phase. And then I started teaching evening classes on Apple products.
Right, okay.
And so these students, they started to ask me, hey, do you know anyone who could come at home to help me with my iPad, my iPhone, and so on? And because starting 2007, actually, I started really to completely immerse myself in the Apple ecosystem, I had quite a good knowledge of Apple products. Mm-hmm. And so I liked that. I really love Apple products. And also I like helping people and teaching people. And so when I looked around, I looked in Luxembourg at the market, I saw that there were a lot of other companies doing Microsoft trainings, and also for PCs, there were a lot of companies, but there were very few companies dealing with Apple. Yeah. And so I thought, okay, that's a good niche for me. So that's how I finally specialized. I decided, no, okay, it's also started to be complicated for me to stay up to date on all the different technologies.
Yeah, so absolutely.
For me, it was also very helpful to decide, okay, no, I will stop having virtual machines with Windows. I will stop having an Android phone and try to keep up with Android. I will just focus on Apple.
Brilliant. And I mean, let's face it, Apple is a serious luxury brand. So there's far worse things for you to for you to align yourself with. If we can just sort of pop back in time a little bit, you mentioned that you were an engineer. I've read in one of your bios that you were a physicist, weren't you?
Yes, I'm physicist engineer.
So what was it that spurred you on to move away from such a, 18 years is a reasonable career. So to move on from that and wanting to move into being your own boss and wanting to set up your own company. Can you just talk us through how that sort of came about?
I would say it was gradual, and the seeds were planted quite early on in my life. So if I go back to my family, my mother is a pedicure and she has always worked for herself. And my father is a coach driver. Mm-hmm. And I've always had this... I've always seen both sides of someone working for a company and someone working for herself. Mm-hmm. And so I think I have that in me already. When I was at... high school, mm-hmm. I took part to a mini enterprise contest, and I really loved it. So we were like five or six students, and we actually run a company during the school year. Mm-hmm. And we were buying I think it was boxer shorts.
Right.
And then we had to design a logo, and we had a special way to sell them and so on. Mm-hmm. And I really loved it. And then I think at university, it was the fourth or the fifth year of university, we had one class on entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was in that class, I remember that I said, someday I will have my own company. But at the same time, it's. I think I followed what my parents and my grandparents expected of me somehow, mm-hmm. And so I put that on the side. I said, "Someday." And then, fast forward, I think it was 2007, the same time when I started really to be deep into the Apple ecosystem, mm-hmm. My first daughter was born. And when these kind of events happen to you, I think you start seeing life differently. And so that's at the time that I started to really think about my career, what I wanted my children to see and to experience. Mm-hmm. And so I think, 2007 was the time when I really, really became serious about starting my own company. But then it took a while. I decided at the time to focus on the children.
Yeah.
And in parallel to that, I started to, I would say, to have some cognitive dissonance with the way big organizations work. Mm-hmm. And especially, I would say, the performance management,
yep,
side of things. And I think it was the build-up of a lot of frustrations, small frustrations, year after year, up to one point where you say, no, it's enough is enough.
Yep.
Let's see if I can't, I can do my own path.
Yeah, fantastic. And then from there, you then started, you know, you put your business concept together, and then you started finding, you know, your first clients, as you said, as part of your side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
So was that, I'm sort of asking a bit of a leading question, because my experience, I've set up two companies in the past, and the first one was, I was a freelancer, a web developer. And I did exactly what you have just explained. That was exactly my thought process. I hadn't been working in the former place for 18 years, but I went through a very, very similar thing, and it became my side hustle. And it was only when I was sort of working four nights a week, Fridays became sacred. I didn't do any work on a Friday night, but I was, you know, I was going to work, doing the day job, coming home, working four nights a week, and then some time at the evenings and weekends. And that was when I thought, right, there's now enough momentum in this that the day job can go and I can do this as a freelancer. So how did you kind of go through a similar process once you started taking on clients? Was that kind of how you approached it as well? Or did you have a different way of looking at it?
It was, I would say it was tricky for me as well. It was, no, so what was tricky was deciding when to go full time.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, and I think that's the mistake I made. Looking back now, in hindsight, it's always easier to say. But I think I had the right metric at the beginning. I wanted to hit a certain revenue threshold on a monthly or quarterly basis. That was my initial thought process. Okay, right, when I will hit so much revenue, then I will quit my job. And then when I realized that it didn't happen, and I became impatient, and that's, I think, the mistake I made. I said, okay, no, let's look at it differently. And I decided that my goal was to hit a certain runway. So. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have savings in a bank account that would cover all my expenses and my family expenses for 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted that runway. And I decided that, okay, whenever I hit that runway, then I will quit my job.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened, actually. So it was September 2016. But the thing is, I realized that I didn't have enough momentum. The mistake that I made was to think that the revenue that I was generating was proportional to the time I was spending in the business. So that seemed logical at the time. Okay, if I spend more time, I will have more customers and more business.
Yeah.
The thing is, even though I think I had a good niche, I didn't have a good prospecting process when I left the company.
Yeah.
And so it took me much more time than I wanted to reach the level of revenue that I needed.
Yeah. That makes sense. So you've obviously now spent time working on that prospecting process and how you acquire new customers. So where did you start, if we can just go on a little bit of a journey through that? So where did you start as a side hustle? Where did you start with seeking your first customers? And then how has that sort of process changed over the past 2 or 3 years since you've been doing this full time?
So when it was a side hustle, it was purely friends and family and then word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
That was I didn't have actually any big strategy, and I must say I'm pretty introverted, and so prospecting is something very hard for me. It's really a draining exercise. I'm getting better at it, but still, it's still not something that I enjoy. And I, reading a lot of books now on the topic, I have the impression that it's not necessarily being introverted or extroverted. That overall, prospecting is a tough job.
Yep.
So the first strategy was just looking at my network, leveraging my network. Mm-hmm. And then when I left the corporate job, I joined a networking organization called BNI. I don't know if you've heard about them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, and I think that was the best decision I made at the time, because it was closer to my values and to the way I see building relationships. Mm-hmm. And so instead of doing a lot of cold calling or cold emailing, with BNI, what we do is we build strong relationships with other professionals in our region. And by trusting us and by knowing us, they will start naturally referring us. And we do the same in, it's the reciprocity. It's the way BNI works, is that we help each other.
Yeah, that's right. So we have BNI. So for anybody that maybe in the States, I don't know whether BNI is in the States or not, but it's a business networking group where the groups are kind of constructed, aren't they? So the idea is that you don't have more than one of a person in a particular profession or particular niche in each group. And in order in sort of building relationships in that group and getting to know the other people, you can then refer work, because, you know, if somebody needs an accountant, you know the accountant in your group. If somebody needs an Apple professional, we know Damien. If somebody needs, I don't know, a design agency, that there may be one of those in there. But the idea is that there's not more than one of each type of business in the group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, BNI started in the US, actually.
It started
It started in the US in 1985.
Okay.
And then it spread across the US, and then I think it reached the UK first, and then France, then Europe, Asia, and now it's everywhere.
It's BNI is one of those kind of Marmite institutions. You get some people that, very few people sit on the fence with it. A lot of people love it. A lot of people don't necessarily agree with it. I've never been to a BNI. To be honest, I was once invited to a BNI group, and it was only when the guy sent me the invite that I realized it was 47 miles away. Mm-hmm. And that there was no way I was going to travel that far regularly to build relationships with these people to engage in the group. So that was as far as it went. That's really good. So you've obviously launched your podcast and things on top of that. So I presume that is now kind of taking your prospecting to the next level, to go from a kind of, you started off as an individual looking at your own network. You've then joined a BNI group, which has obviously expanded that network, but it's still, I would assume, a relatively local thing.
Yes.
And then you've now started your podcast, which is taking you a bit further afield again. So how's that all sort of fitting in for you? How's that working out?
So it's part of a strategy, of a business strategy. Mm-hmm. When I started, I was mainly doing consulting work. Well, I was doing a bit of both, training and consulting in mm-hmm. the exploratory phase. But then I really focused on consulting. It was mostly private individuals. And with BNI, joining BNI helped me to go more towards the B2B market. So local B2B market, which is actually better in terms of profitability and recurring revenues and so on.
Yeah.
But now my strategy is to go more towards training and also online training. I've started webinars, giving webinars.
Yep.
And so the Macpreneur for me is a way to start reaching a more global audience. and in order to provide online courses, live webinars, on-demand webinars.
Yep. Great. So what actually launching the podcast is doing for you is it's allowing to diversify your offering into, I suppose, things that are potentially slightly lower cost to the customer, but they're more profitable for you overall. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. And also with a bigger target market than currently in Luxembourg.
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, your podcast is, there'll be a link to the podcast in the show notes if anybody wants to go and check it out. You can find it all on macpreneur.com, but they'll, as I say, there'll be a link in the show notes through to your website as well. And, you know, I really hope it's starting to go well for you. You're 30 or so episodes in now, aren't you? So how have you found the podcast and the process of starting it and, you know, getting going? Because you're almost a sort of year or so into that.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love helping people. I discovered that I love interviewing people. And but I think it's very, my journey with Macpreneur is very similar to my journey with EasyTech, is that I'm really struggling contacting people to be guests on the show. And so what was supposed to be a weekly interview show became a more of a mix of solo shows and interviews. I really love interviewing people. I think that's the best part of it. It's not only can I learn things from other people, but also it helps my audience to discover different ways to use Apple products and services. And usually, when I have podcast guests, we discover new tools, new apps, and so on.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoy doing my podcast, and it's finding guests can sometimes be a chore. I'm perfectly honest, and I put that one out there. We connected through the Upreneur Academy as one of my pushes to actually find some guests, because I wanted to sort of flesh out the schedule for the next few months. And you're dead right. The whole thing about just talking to somebody else that's on a journey, that's part of this, the entrepreneur sort of life, can be quite a lonely one, because you know you do give up that kind of accountability, or that, you know, that you get in an office job, for example. So it's almost like another form of networking by interviewing people on the show. It was just we happen to record our conversations, and that's the way it is. But it also means that, you know, I glean things out of the conversations that I never would have thought of because of the experiences of the guests. I think you've done it completely right, however, in that you started the podcast because you wanted to help people. Anybody that starts a podcast because they want people to listen to them will be thoroughly disappointed for a very long time, because it, you know, starting a podcast and getting it out there is like, you know, you're talking to thin air for the best part of, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 months, whatever it might be. So I think you've done a really good job with that, and you've obviously been able to structure your business in a way that you can offer some good free content through the podcast, but then also tailor that into paid for support or consultancy or online training or whatever it might be. There's lots of options for you to productize off the back of that free content that you deliver through the podcast. So no, I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
So just on that, you do offer a free course as well on your website as well, don't you?
Yes, I've created a free email course with 30 tips for the better using the Mac and iPhone and iPad. It's a 30 email, 30 tips, one a day for 30 days.
Brill. And that's so easy, because it just gets delivered direct to your inbox. And you've actually been kind enough to put together a bit of a freebie for our guests as well, haven't you? So do you want to sort of take us through what you've done there?
Yeah, so what I've prepared for your guests who are using Apple computers, I've prepared some keyboard shortcuts for them. There are two pages, one for macOS, so generic keyboard shortcuts, and one really specific to the Finder. And there are a bunch of interesting keyboard shortcuts. One that I'm using almost all the time, it's Command-D to duplicate a file in Finder. So there are a bunch of keyboard shortcuts. Yeah, I will put them at macpreneur.com/MDP.
Fantastic.
And there will no need to sign up. They can download the PDF right there. There will be a box if they want to sign up for the free email course, but the PDF they can download like that.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Damien. And I'll make sure that there's links to all of that in the show notes so that people can just click straight on through from their phone or whatever it is that they're on and access your resources. I really appreciate that. So, look, thank you so much for being so honest with us and for sharing your journey. If people do want to reach out to you, what's the best place for them to get hold of you?
They can send me an email at damien@macpreneur.com.
Fantastic. I probably won't put that as a link in the show notes, just so you don't get so that you don't get spam email. But of course, it is macpreneur.com, so there'll be and there's a contact form and whatever on there, so people can get in touch with you that way. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time, and really appreciated having you on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Cheers, Damien.
Cheers. Bye.
Damien, thank you so much for your time and your insight. Show notes for this episode can be found at peteeverett.com/052. And if you haven't yet checked out our course that's all about SEO, then head on over to marketingdevelopment.academy and check out what demystifying white hat SEO is all about. We take a step-by-step approach looking at the methodology of applying good SEO to any website. Please go and check it out, and I look forward to seeing you next week.